From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. We'll continue our conversation with Congressman Ron Kind, a Democrat from La Crosse who represents Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. He's covering everything from the situation in the Middle East and how it affects people in western Wisconsin to projects he'd like to see move forward on the Mississippi River. Before we left off, Kind was talking about the bipartisan climate in Washington and in Wisconsin, which leads me to a question on many people's minds. Is Kind running for governor? Does he want to hold on to a seat in Congress?
I'm wondering, along the same lines of politics, have you made any official decisions regarding your future with Congress? Or I did read that in Milwaukee, they interpreted your answer when you said if you were going to run for governor. They interpreted it as no.
But I saw that because they didn't get the yes, I am running answer.
Exactly. And you gave the answer that you gave us a month ago, and we all determined that.
Well, I'll be making an announcement shortly in that. But naturally, there's been a lot going on here in the state. And as a lifetime resident of this state, my home state, I am concerned about the future direction that has occurred. And I have been disappointed with the agenda that Governor Walker has pushed in Madison. And it was unfortunate that it led to deep division in the state, in communities, even within families. And it didn't have to be this way. And it certainly wasn't the Wisconsin way of bringing people together, working through these issues. The demonization of our public employees did not make sense. They were not the cause of the budget shortfalls that we were facing. Yet they were the first ones willing to step up to the table and say, we understand we got to be a part of the solution. But that wasn't good enough for Governor Walker and the legislature at the time. And then the voter suppression bill that I call that is going to make it more difficult for low-income families, for minority people, for seniors, to students to just participate by voting is outrageous. It was a solution. It was an answer in search of a problem. The idea that there's rampant voter fraud occurring in our communities is silly. And yet I view that more as an attempt to shut people out and make it more difficult for them to participate, which is the wrong direction we should be going in as a democracy.
Because it seems like by the time you do make a decision and whenever you announce that decision, I mean, you kind of have to choose one seat or the other, correct?
Right. Yeah, it is. And listen, we'll be announcing something shortly in that, but right now what I'm engaged in at the federal level I think is very important. Trying to do the best job of changing the tone and the attitude in Washington, which is in desperate need of change, the focus on the economy. I'm on the committee with jurisdiction over tax reform. That, too, is another building block that we've got to try to do right in order to have the long-term growth we need. And our current tax code is a monstrosity. It's not working well, nor is it fair, nor is it leading to the type of economic growth that we need in the country. So there's no shortage of work to go around these days.
So going back to taxes, last month you voted against the payroll tax cut, and you said it's because you wanted a plan in place that would be able to pay for this, and instead it's just adding to the deficit. Yeah. Can you talk about that more, and did you feel like it was a risky vote to take in an election season?
Well, listen, the easiest thing for Congress to do is to cop out and extend things without paying for them. And the hardest thing is to abide by pay-as-you-go budgeting rules. I have been a big proponent of pay-as-you-go budgeting, that if there's a tax cut that is important enough or some new spending program that's important enough, then we got to work hard to find an offset in the existing budget so we're not adding to the deficit, so we're not adding to the debt burden that our children and grandchildren are going to face. I think extending the payroll tax cut was an important thing to do for our economy. Having a tax increase on 160 million Americans, given how fragile the economic growth has been, would not have been a good thing. But I also believe it should have been paid for, and the fact that it wasn't paid for led to my no vote. And the same thing happened right after the 2010 elections. It was an election season where there was all this gnashing of teeth and, oh, my God, budget deficits, we're going to turn into Greece and that. And yet one of the first thing that occurred in Congress when we got back after the election was a 2-year extension of the Bush tax cuts, which cost us $1 trillion of deficit spending. And yet virtually every Republican colleague voted for that extension. So they try to have it both ways. They talk a good game when it comes to fiscal management and our budget deficits, but when it comes time to cast the tough vote and actually live up to it, oftentimes they're absent without leave. And we have to have more fiscal discipline right now in order to get our own fiscal house in order. And that certainly wasn't demonstrated with the payroll tax extension.
A local issue that is generating a lot of interest in this area currently is the CapEx 2020 and American Transmission Company's Badger Cooley line, right, which their energy transmission upgrades. It's a state issue, and I don't know how much of a role you could play in that. Have you thought much about it, and
what role
could you play?
Yeah, in fact, every meeting that has happened here in western Wisconsin, my staff have been at it in order to gather information, in order to hear what's on people's mind, reporting back to me. I recently had a meeting with a lot of the concerned citizens in my own office talking about not just the CapEx, but the Cooley Badger program. One of the questions that I'm asking is why we are piecemealing this. If it's clear that CapEx and Cooley are going to be merged at some point, why aren't we dealing this holistically and comprehensively rather than just certain sections of it at a time? And I haven't been given an adequate response to that. Right now, all eyes are on the PSC. They've got to make an initial determination of whether it's even necessary, whether the energy is even needed. And the preliminary study that they did led me to believe that they have serious questions about the necessity of this project.
And the population growth.
As far as what the population growth is going to require. But that's the initial hurdle. And if for some reason they think the project is necessary, then you get into the siting issue in a hurry. And I know there's some very serious concerns throughout this region in regards to where those power lines are going to go and who it's going to impact. And that, too, is something that is going to have to get worked out.
Can the federal government do anything regarding state energy projects like this? I know President Obama has recommended that the CapEx project be fast-tracked.
Right.
But what difference does that make in the long run?
Well, not much, because obviously you've got the PSC decision here in Wisconsin that's going to control whether it's necessary. And the determination as far as the lines will be done here at the state and local level, too. I think the president's been trying to expedite all reviews when it comes to these transmission projects throughout the nation, because we do have a grid issue. But there is some concern that these power lines are really meant to bring cheaper energy from the plains states to the high populated areas such as the East Coast. So the thought that this is something that's necessary for western Wisconsin or even the Madison area, I think there are a lot of doubts about that. And what is the real intent behind these power lines, just to bring the energy generation from middle America to the East Coast? I think a lot of people would have some serious concerns about that.
I want to talk with you about a bill that passed in the Wisconsin legislature this week. The Scenic Byways Bill would expand what roads can be designated as a scenic byway. A lot of that was because of Bliss Road here in La Crosse.
That's right.
From what I understand, though, the future of the Scenic Byways National Program, that may be losing its federal funding. Do you know much about that? And if it did lose its federal funding, does it make any difference what happens in the state then?
Well, it wouldn't. And unfortunately, there is an effort underfoot in Congress that would eliminate the funding for the scenic byways and also the mass transit fund, both of which have a tremendous impact for our state and in this area. And my hat's off to Representative Billings as a new member. She pushed this and talked to a lot of people, and with Senator Schilling's support, too, they were able to get it done, which could help as far as Bliss Road and some of the other roads that I think deserve more attention in this region. But without the federal funds to come in to match what the state and localities want to do, it will unfortunately be meaningless. And that's why this transportation bill that's being debated right now in Congress is so important, that we try to do it the right way, not the wrong way, by defunding a lot of these vitally important programs. That being one. The other, the mass transit bill, is going to be tremendously important. That was a dedicated funding stream for mass transit projects. And in light of higher fuel costs now and what people are paying at the pump, those mass transit systems are going to be in even greater demand as we move forward. And for many people, low income, who may have a job, being able to keep that job is going to be dependent on their access to mass transit, because they don't own a car and there's no other way for them to get to work. So if we're hoping to be able to lift people up and get them out of poverty, I think mass transit is going to have to be a major component of that.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guest today is Congressman Ron Kind. He's a Democrat from La Crosse. I'm wondering if you can break down what's going on in the Middle East right now. There are a lot of situations that are going on, and I'm wondering if you can help us understand how this relates to people in western Wisconsin. Obviously, military personnel, it affects them and their families.
Well, as far as the local impact, we had another death announcement of Staff Sergeant Jesse Grenley from the Hazel Green area. Young husband with two young children, 3 and 2 years old, and it's heartbreaking. And no question that Wisconsin generally, but Western Wisconsin more specifically, has contributed our fair share of the deployments in both Iraq and Afghanistan. Sergeant Grenley now is the 23rd casualty here in Western Wisconsin, this congressional district alone, which is a disproportionately high number. And you can't underestimate the impact that has on the family, but also the entire community from which they come. And it's tough, and it's the hardest part of my job, too. But I've called on the president to expedite his review of downsizing our military presence in Afghanistan. I think it's time. When you have so-called Afghan allied soldiers turning their guns on our soldiers, and they're supposed to be serving side by side, or American civilians being shot in Afghan ministries, that is an untenable situation. They now have no safe haven where they can go and decompress. My concern is going to lead to an increase in PTSD, mental health issues, since there is no battle line now where they can remove themselves and feel safe in country. And now President Karzai is asking for the president to pull back our troops from the front lines and back into the barracks. And if that happens, what's the point of them even being in the country? We've been there for 10 years. It's been a long time. We've tried our best to try to help the Afghan people to self-govern and handle their own security. Now we got to take those training wheels off and turn it over to them quicker.
The headline in the La Crosse Tribune this week said, Kind says, bring the troops home. Do you stand by that comment?
I do. And I think there's a way of doing it responsibly without jeopardizing our own national security interests in the region. We've seriously degraded al-Qaeda's capability. We've gone after their leadership to great success. Bin Laden is no longer walking this planet. And there are ways that we can maintain that forward momentum, but without such a huge military presence in the region or even in Afghanistan specifically. There will be advisors staying in Afghanistan for some time to try to work with Afghan security forces for training, equipping purposes. But the huge troop presence that we have right now I don't think is necessary or justified, nor is the $2 billion a week that we're investing in the country in Afghanistan when we have so much nation building to do here at home. That, too, has been a continuous economic drain on our country for the last 10 years. And given the large budget deficits that we're facing and the need that exists at home, we can't sustain that anymore.
In Syria, today actually is the one-year anniversary of the uprising.
Right.
What are your takes on what's going on in Syria and the U.S.?
Well, the al-Assad regime is finding themselves more and more isolated by the day. The atrocities, the human rights violations that he is ordering within his own country against his own countrymen is intolerable. And the fact that the United Arab League has united against him, all the major nations in the region are united against him in order to put pressure on him to resign and to step down. Unfortunately, we are discovering from email that was captured that Iran has been a big factor in solidifying his power in the country, which continues to tell you how dangerous Iran is and what a destabilizing force Iran is throughout the region. But we don't have much leverage over Assad. NATO doesn't have much leverage over them, and apparently the United Arab League doesn't, but two countries do outside of Iran, and that's Russia and China. And those are the two countries that have leverage over Iran as well. We need to figure out a way to get them to step up and start doing the right thing and starting to cooperate with the rest of the international community if we're ever going to see some progress made in both Syria and Iran today.
And then Iran. I know that inspectors are trying to get in and they're and different countries are trying to have nuclear talks, and then you have Israel saying that they may have to preemptively strike.
Well, no one wants to see a nuclearized Iran in the region. That will lead to an arms race overnight. And it's not just the neighboring country's security that we need to be concerned about or Israel's security. It's our own security, because it wouldn't take much to load a nuclear device in some shipping container and have it find its ways to the shore of the United States. So there is a direct national security interest that we have to ensure that Iran does not develop a nuclear weapon. But I also support what the president's been doing, and that's isolating Iran economically through sanctions with the help of the international community and cutting off their finances by going after the Iranian Central Bank. From all indications, those sanctions are starting to bite, and it's starting to hurt in Iran, and we need to continue to close that loop and isolate them further. But again, unless or until Russia and China are willing to join the chorus of other nations to influence Iran to do the right thing here, and that's to back down from their nuclear program, it's going to remain a very dangerous situation. And the immediate impact it's going to have on us back home is rising prices at the pump. Because the more pressure we bring to bear in Iran today, the more speculation there's going to be in the commodities future market, and we're seeing those speculators drive up oil prices, and it bears no relationship between supply and demand issues. In fact, our demand right now for oil is low, and it's declining in this country through fuel efficiency standards, increased technology. We're actually exporting refined petroleum products here in the United States because we have excess supply. We've never had more oil rigs pumping on our land than we do today. And oil production in the United States is at an all-time high. So all this talk about drill, baby, drill, and all we need to do is just drill more oil is nonsensical because we've been doing that, and prices are still going up because oil is priced in the global marketplace. And what happens overseas has a direct impact on that price, whether it's Iran. But more importantly, the increased demand for oil in the emerging markets of Asia, Brazil, and India tells me that we're never going to be able to drill enough, fast enough, to keep up with increased global demand for oil. And we're always going to find ourselves in this box. So to me, it means we've got to be more aggressive and start investing in these alternative and renewable energy programs and to wean ourselves off from our dependence on oil, whether we're pumping it here in America or whether it's coming from overseas.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guest today is Congressman Ron Kind. He's a Democrat from La Crosse. Any legislation or any projects you have coming up?
Well, I still believe that we've got to stay focused on rising health care costs. It's really the bane of our budget deficits right now at the federal, state, and local level. It's one of the great hindrances to increased job creation. It's making our companies, both large and small, less competitive globally. And it has a huge financial impact on family budgets. In fact, rising health care costs is the largest and fastest growing area of spending with the federal, state, and local budgets. So if we're really going to be serious about fiscal responsibility and getting our fiscal house back in order, we have to stay focused on why health care costs are rising and what can be done to address it. And there are answers to this. And fortunately for us, we have health care providers in this region that are providing us models of health care delivery that work very well. They're highly integrated. They're coordinated, they're patient-focused, leading to some of the best results in the nation. But because they're not practicing volume medicine, the reimbursements aren't as high. And so we've got to change the way we pay for health care. So it's based on the value as opposed to the volume of care that's given. And this is important because studies continuously show that we're spending close to one out of every three health care dollars on things that don't work, on more tests, procedures, things that aren't improving patient care. That's about $800 billion we're spending in healthcare every year that we're not getting a good bang for the buck for. And we got to change that because we can't afford these volume-based payments anymore. And we've got healthcare providers in this region who have been calling for these reforms and these changes for some time. And under the Affordable Care Act, the tools are finally in place that will give us the opportunity to start reforming the way healthcare is delivered in our country and how we pay for it so we can get better outcomes at a better price. And that needs to be a shared goal that everyone has.
I understand your birthday is tomorrow.
Yeah, it's coming up again.
Are you doing anything special, or is there anything you like to do in the area?
Well, we're going to spend some time with the family and get them around, but I remind the boys, it's not the years, it's the mileage, even though they like to razz me now with the growing gray hair that's affecting my head too. But now we're going to be staying close to home and celebrating that way.
Congressman Ron Kind represents Western Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. He's a Democrat from La Crosse. I'd like to thank Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Roysom and WISM Radio's Brad Williams for also asking questions. Newsmakers next week, when we'll talk with a Wisconsin World War II veteran who was involved in liberating a German slave labor camp, and a young local filmmaker who's documenting his life.
Also, learn about a new AARP initiative that will try to involve the public in more discussions on Medicare and Social Security. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll also find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. Newsmakers is also now on Facebook. Updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Follow us at WPR Newsmakers on Facebook.